You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Fly on the Call. Today I'm super excited to be talking to Victoria Bark about her debut album, The Parts I Dread, which is out now via Get Better Records. I first heard this album, an early copy of it, in I think maybe the start of January, and it immediately hit home for me. It was something that I knew I was super excited to cover and super excited for, you know, to see the reaction to. Spoiler, it just got a 7.0 on Pitchfork, which is amazing. It's very, you know, intimate, intentional, and spacious bass-centered music. It reminds me almost a little bit of Mount Eerie's A Crow Looked at Me, mixed with a little bit of pedal and a little bit of, I don't know, just all things great, honestly. So today we're talking about creating this bass-centered music and using instruments for storytelling, things falling into place with the release of the album, and doing it all while having a really intense touring schedule and working as a hired gun bassist. She's currently on tour with Pink Shift opening for Pup, and really just out there doing the damn thing. So I'm so stoked for you to listen to this episode and hear more about Victoria Bark. How's tour been going?
It's been good. We just finished the Squirrel Flower full US for February and March, like 2 days ago. So now I'm at Treefort for all of this week, and then I fly to rehearse with Pink Shift, and then we go back out on another 6 weeks. So it's like, it feels like, you know, I wish I had a little bit more time to process, like, how, you know, like, this big thing that we just finished and accomplished, but it's just like, nope, just gotta keep going, and you have to do that same thing all over again that you just did. I'm like, cool, like, so just trying to take it in stride, and like, I don't know, definitely we'll probably need to take a nap.
That's totally fair. I mean, like, releasing an album in the middle of that is pretty intense as well. Like, how do you feel like you're able to kind of, like, is it taking your focus away from it, or like taking the stressors away from like thinking about like having and hawing how it's going to go?
Honestly, I don't know, because I'm like, oh shoot, I just forgot to like do this thing or that thing. And I'm like, if I think about anything for too long, it's like, oh God, like, you know, I just have to like do it and not think about how much there is to do. I'm really nervous for like how it's gonna happen, and I'm like, oh shoot, it comes out in 2 weeks, like I should really be pushing like pre-sales for the album, shouldn't I? Like little things like that I'm just like forgetting, or it's falling off. But it seems like a lot of pieces are coming into place. I got confirmation that like Pitchfork's doing a review.
Oh shit, wow, nice.
And yeah, it's gonna be like on Bandcamp's New and Notable. So I'm just like, cool, like all the things are like that I've worked for the last like 2 years with this record are like slowly being put into place, and I just hope that I feel good about it all on release day. And hopefully there are some people who want the record. I have no idea what those numbers look like, so.
I mean, you mentioned like that you've been working towards this for like 2 years. I'd love to hear a little bit about kind of just the, you know, getting the time frame in mind for like, you know, how the writing and recording process went down.
Yeah, totally. I guess if you include like writing, it's quite a bit longer. The oldest song on this record is from fall 2017, and the newest song is written fall 2021. So it took that entire time to like write these 8 songs, and like I don't have any like spare material from that time frame that like didn't make the album. Like I really just wrote what needed to be written. And recording wise like I was getting to this point in writing stuff where it's like, I think I have a record, I think it just needs like a little bit something here and a little bit of something there, and then I think it tells this like full story. And then I approached my band from back home, and I was like, I think maybe let's record this. And initially we were going to, like, quarantine together over winter break of my senior year of college, like, down the shore, and do it all there in, like, the span of a month. But that didn't, like, it was when Delta was surging pretty badly, and we were like, I don't think I'm gonna fly. Like, I think this just doesn't make any sense. So we were like, well, let's just record everything remotely. And that's what we did. We woke up at 9 a.m. every day, got hopped on a Zoom call and talked about, like, what was going to happen. And then we hit it and recorded and did it the next day. And it was, like, the first time I treated working on my music in a way that seriously in a really long time, which was so cool and special to, like, work on and do with friends.
I feel like it sounds so cohesive. Like, I'm surprised that it was all recorded remotely. Like, can you talk a little about kind of, like, that process?
Yeah. Basically, what we did is, like, we created a new Gmail account just to, like, overload, like, the drive storage on. And so we were just, like, putting stems in there and recording, you know, from our own individual bedrooms, and it turned out to be much better than I could have ever imagined. And a lot of that I have to thank Gavin Kane, who co-produced the record with me, and he mixed everything and just, like, really was so thoughtful in executing, like, the vision I had for these songs and, like, working together to make everything sound cohesive. Like, I think it's a huge accomplishment, you know, whether or not, like, this album goes anywhere, that it, like, sounds as cohesive as and as nice as it does, considering the means of how we recorded it. So for that, I feel really proud.
Yeah, I think one of the things that, like, really stands out to me is, like, there's a lot of space in the album, and it feels like it's, you know, very intentional to create, like, a specific kind of environment, and it also allows kind of the big moments to be especially big. Like, how did you kind of go about, you know, crafting the overall, like, sound and flow of the album?
I think it was kind of treating, like, using production to treat all of, like, each song individually, which sounds very, like, straightforward, but I think what I mean is, like, instead of being like, well, let's keep everything really minimal, or let's, you know, maximize everything and just, like, go balls to the walls with layers of guitar, like, using both of those, like, aesthetics and, like, schools of thought in different ways to serve each individual song. So on a song like Wyoming, we wanted to do everything. So we built the drum machine, we crossfaded, like, the verse parts with the chorus parts, and, like, layer, it has, like, 100 tracks total to, like, really get that, like, meaty, distorted sound. But on the total flip side, the closer Friends song, it's really just 5 or 6 tracks, maybe. It's really nothing too crazy, and we kept it pretty minimal to, like, let the song feel very natural and cozy. And so through that, I think you also get this, like, dynamic arc that kind of pairs with the, like, narrative of the, like, whole album too.
Yeah, and I mean, you've mentioned kind of, like, that narrative, the overarching story of the album a couple times. Like, can you give a little bit of insight about, like, you know, what the message as a whole is that you wanted to get out there?
Yeah. So this album is kind of about this, like, period of my life in which my parents had decided to move from New Jersey, where I'd spent my whole life, to Wyoming in the middle of college. And, like, as right before I was going to study abroad in Paris. So it felt like there were a lot of things that are, like, were changing all at once that I didn't feel a sense of control over. It was a big source of anxiety. I'm like, Wyoming, like, we don't know anybody there. Like, why are we going there? It's really, really far. Oh, yeah, exactly. And, like, not being able to, like, see my friends or, like, play music with them, you know, in these final years where it's like we're all living kind of in one place together. It felt like this thing that was, like, taken away from me and causing a lot of anxiety. But also at the same time, like, it felt like a stand-in issue for other things, like why I feel inflexible to change, or, like, have all of these anxieties, or, like, these relation, like, this tension I have with, like, my parents. And so kind of using that as, like, the entry point to, like, these other deeper issues.
Yeah, and I feel like that heart on your sleeve, like really getting to the bare bones of stuff, also kind of goes very well with the, you know, kind of bass centered music. And, you know, like you were saying, certain moments where it's like very stripped down and, you know, super personal, you know, lyrically and instrumentally. How do you kind of like go about crafting a sound that coincides with the messaging?
That is such a great question, and I'm so glad like you asked it, because it's something I've thought about a lot in making the record. So I'm primarily a bassist, and I wrote all of these songs on bass on this record, and that sound I feel like is as much like what makes my music as, you know, in addition to my songwriting and my voice or whatever. And so there's this one, I guess it's two moments, but I think of it as one moment. The ending of Out, it's just drums and guitar, like there's no bass, and it's really loud, really, you know, to like symbolize this like loss of a sense of self. And then that transitions into Demera starting off with only acoustic guitar and my voice, with the bass coming in like in the last verse, or like it becoming bass and so like my solo voice in the last verse. So like those two moments together, even though sonically they're at the total opposite ends of the spectrum, it's like this harsh noise part and this like acoustic track, they both are kind of like this sense of like not to represent this like larger sense of like loss of a sense of self, which is like, I don't know, a big part of like expressing the theme. So it's definitely something that's like been on my mind, and like how to use instrumentation for storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned the outro and Out, which is definitely like something that I found notable. But I mean, that song as a whole really stands out to me. It has like this kind of like slow, like marching feel. And like, I love how the bass line like really and melody really follow each other. How did that one kind of like come together? Like, it almost feels like a cinematic, like movie soundtrack moment for me.
Yes, that's exactly what I wanted. So yeah, thank you so much. Out was definitely one where I wanted to challenge myself to like write in a little bit of a different way than I typically have. First off, so I wanted to try writing in a minor key, because I haven't really written anything in minor. I'm like, what would that sound like? What would that be like? And then focusing on like the bass parts and the structure and the dynamics first, and then the melody and the lyrics were actually added last, which is typically not how I write at all. So it became a lot more of this like arc of, you know, getting to the bare bones of like a sound and dynamics and structure, and then adding lyrics that I liked how they sounded together.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned kind of like the dynamics of that song. Another one where the dynamics really stand out is Good For. Like, I love the little like instrumental swells that just get bigger and bigger until like the end, which feels like almost like joyous, like victorious kind of. Can you tell me a little about that song?
Yeah, so we did a single of Good For 2 years ago now. We recorded that summer 2019 and put it out in March 2020. You know, great timing for releases of the world. And we decided to re-record most of it. We kept the backwards guitar solo from the version we recorded then, just because we wanted it to sound a little bit more cohesive with the rest of the record and give ourselves the time to add in more of those details and really, you know, make the song as luscious as we could. I remember when we were recording it, one of the things I described in like how to like pace the reverse elements, because it's like, how do you time something that's going backwards? And the image I use is like when you're driving in a car, like on a highway, and the telephone poles are like zooming past you, but they're like evenly spaced, so it moves in a rhythm. So that's kind of like how we conceptualize some of those details. But the most fun part about making it and recording it is getting what is labeled in the track as the emo choir. And I basically tweeted, I was just like, hey, does anyone want to like yell one line on a song? And like 30 people ended up sending me stuff. And then it just like creates this like really joyous, fun, like explosive, victorious moment. And that was just like such a crazy and fun and wild experience to
do. Nice. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, as kind of like slow as the music is at times, there's like always this really strong like forward momentum. Like it feels like, you know, it's constantly, it doesn't ever feel like it's like lagging behind or anything. Is that something that you kind of like do intentionally or like keep in mind while you're writing?
Thank you so much. I hope so. Like I think like, yeah, it's definitely good to not just like, you know, have the same thing happening in one verse as another verse, and it's just like switching things up just a little bit. Like it's really all in the details that make the song like propel forward and have that kind of like motion. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned, you know, how making this music centered around the bass is something that you feel is like very unique to your sound. I'm curious, like, how does that affect your writing process compared to how you've seen like other musicians write, starting off with that rather than, you know, on a piano or an acoustic guitar or something?
I wonder, because I also have, so like Radio Silence was actually the only song I've ever written on guitar. And I have been thinking about it, and I think it is a lot more melodically focused. Like there's room to change exactly what chords go with a certain part because of like, well, let's say you have like a note that's like in the vocal melody and in the bass, like, and there's like, you know, five or six different chord options you could do. So it gives like a little more flexibility in that sense. But I am trying to figure that out. I think it mostly means like I feel a lot more confident when I'm writing because I know how to play bass better than I do piano or guitar in this moment in time. And so it's just like, yes, I know how to make these chords. Like, and I don't have to like think about chord shapes is the main like difference I notice.
Nice. Yeah. And I'm curious how that kind of like translates to the live show. Like, do you play more solo or like full band?
I've been doing a mix. I guess mostly like the past few shows I've done, which I can't even remember when the last solo Pictorial Mark show I played was, have been, yeah, just me on my bass. I guess the next ones I have are at Tree Fort. So it'll be just me solo bass. But I do like playing full band. And I think something that I've struggled with in the past before is because I am not like a trained singer at all. And I sing kind of quiet, is like sometimes I feel like I have a hard time like setting my voice like above the drums and like a louder set. But solo bass, I feel like it works really nicely. And something that I'm changing up for Tree Fort is I'm actually going to be using some of my pedals to emulate those like louder moments when I don't have a full band. So to hopefully bring some like more dynamics into that and play with that.
Yeah, and how did that like starting towards more experimentation kind of come together for you?
It's mostly just been something I've been thinking about as I've like built like a setup that I like how it sounds. And so I was just like, well, if I like how that sounds in a different band, like maybe I should try using that in my own. And thinking about like some of the way that like Mitski has played like her audio tree session and things like that, her tiny desk to like, and I think she really goes in kind of both ends of the spectrum and in really thoughtful ways, both in terms of like accentuating quiets and making louds loud, especially in like a live performance setting.
Obviously the album is coming out and was pressed through Get Better Records. I was really excited when it was coming out on vinyl, especially. I'm curious how that relationship kind of started.
If we had to say, you know, if people couldn't guess it, I met them through Twitter. we started following each other and I was like, they are doing a lot of cool stuff and they're working with a lot of my friends. And they were one of the labels I was thinking about reaching out to anyways when I was like label shopping, but I was like, I'm just gonna tweet just to see, like, if there's anyone who's, like, already been thinking about it or, like, has room. And they reached out, and they liked it, and we talked about it, and yeah, and then I decided to, like, work with them, and now we're doing vinyl, which is crazy.
Nice, yeah. And, I mean, I know you also have been doing, like, social stuff with Refresh Records, and obviously we mentioned your touring musician side of things as well earlier. Like, can you talk a little about kind of just, you know, having these different arms in different parts of the industry and how that kind of, like, is for you?
It's definitely very chaotic, and I don't think I'm doing a very good job. Like, I'm trying really hard to keep on top of things, and I made the horrible mistake of being like, maybe I'll just, like, try out consulting to see if I like that, and, like, have ghosted, like, just not intentionally, but because I just, like, can't get back to anybody. I stopped texting every single person, like, unless I'm seeing them that day. It's like, I just am not getting back to people. I'm falling behind a little bit on my Refresh stuff, so I'm sorry, Josh, but I'm wearing the shirt, so maybe it's okay. So I'm really trying to just, like, figure it out day by day, get caught up on days off, and, like, get really comfortable in the van, like, working and sending emails and doing that stuff, like, using pockets of time where there is, because there are pockets of time, it's just about using them. So instead of just, like, looking at my phone for 2 hours in the green room, just, like, knocking out a few emails or stuff like that, getting wiser with my time. But also, especially towards the end of, you know, a long stretch, like, just taking time to chill out and rest.
For sure.
So, yeah, it's definitely all a balance, and one that I'm doing very, very bad at. So,
well, definitely keep me updated if you figure out the right formula, because that's very much where I'm trying to get with the podcast too. I'm curious, like, how did you kind of, like, get into the touring bassist, you know, side of things? Because, I mean, that I feel like, you know, I don't see as many people kind of, like, working in that realm.
Yeah, that's kind of what I started out doing in music, more or less. Like, I mostly played bass in other people's bands, like, in high school, and I started playing with Squirrel Flower actually in college. Like, that's my college band, which is crazy. I was, like, a baby freshman, and she was a senior, and she was like, hey, I'm playing this these few shows. Do you want to, like, play bass? I know you're busy, but, like, would love to play bass. And that's just, like, been something that's grown organically. And yeah, I'm, like, primarily trained, like, as a bassist. It's kind of, like, how I see myself, like, working in music in a, like, long-term career way, and something, like, I hope to do. There's definitely, I don't know, yeah, I feel like it's less common, and I definitely want to, like, talk to other hired guns and just, like, kind of figure out what that life is really like. Someone who I think is really cool and, like, haven't had a chance to really meet or talk to is Livy from Mamalarkey, because she has, like, Mamalarkey, but she also, like, plays bass in Cherry Glazer and, like, plays keyboards for Faye Webster, and so has this career that, like, kind of makes sense to me and kind of, like, something that I, like, aspire to be, like, and just kind of want to know what that's like, so... There's a few of us out here.
Yeah, I mean, for you so far, how is that kind of, like, how do you interweave that side of things with your own projects and stuff?
I have no idea. Honestly, like, I feel like in some ways they're, like, two separate worlds, or, like, they can overlap for sure. I think it's mostly just, like, being able to be out on the road and meet people and make friends is just hugely important, not only to, like, feel like a person and, like, have fun and on the road, but also, like, those are friendships that you never know where they could lead to. Like, I met Pink Shift when I was doing, like, a small DIY tour February 2020, like, with my solo project, and then they got huge, and then they hired me to, like, play bass with them. So, you know, 2 years ago, that's something I would have never imagined happening, but, like, you know, sometimes you go to shows and you meet people and you meet friends and you stay friends. And I think that's just, like, the beautiful thing about life and music is just, like, growing a really lovely community of people around you, like, yourself, and, like, around the people you love, and just making friends and being nice. Those are the two rules.
Nice. Yeah, I'm sure like the life on the road is great for inspiration as well. Like I can't imagine, you know, like feeling super inspired over the last year and a half of like quarantine, like 2 years of quarantine.
Yeah, totally. I feel like every time I come off of tour, I have like this huge burst of like creativity and a lot of stuff that I want to like jot down or like wanting to write a lot. But I can't write at all when I'm on tour, which is because I'm just like, I just need to like soak it all in and it'll come out later, you know?
For sure. And yeah, I mean, I always like to wrap up the same way, which is just by kind of asking for a piece of advice or something that you've been thinking about lately, whether it's music related or just life in general or anything else.
I guess music related advice is don't stress out too much. If you're not having fun now, you won't have fun when you're famous. And really think about that. And general life advice, eat fruits and vegetables every day, even on tour, even from the gas station. Jumping rope is good. Alone time is good. And you are supposed to poop in the morning.
That's funny you said the part about eating fruits and vegetables, because I was just thinking earlier, I was like, I eat Taco Bell so much, my life would not change on tour.
Honestly, okay, here's the thing. I think Taco Bell is honestly not that bad as far as like fast food options go. Like there's actual vegetarian options there that are not bad. And like,
I mean, that's the only reason that I eat so much.
Yeah, it's so good. I love Taco Bell.
Nice. I mean, as any true DIY person does.
Oh, yeah. And then they have that like Taco Bell, like feed the beat thing too. Like, I'm just like, give me all of the Taco Bell, please. So one day.
And alas, we come to the end of another episode of Fly on the Call. Seriously, this album by Pictoria Park is one of my favorites of the year. Definitely going to end up on, you know, my list, whether it's numbered or not. Whatever it is at the end of the year, it's definitely going to be on there because it's truly a release that I've continuously enjoyed and I don't see that stopping anytime soon. I've been planning the next couple months of Fly on the Call and I'm super excited for the bands I'm going to be featuring and the conversations I'm going to be having. So be sure to, you know, stay along for the ride. I'm loving what I'm doing and can't wait to give you more. Fly on the Call is brought to you by Sound Talent Media in partnership with Evergreen Podcasts. A special thank you as always to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Jiraiya for the theme song, and Michaela Jane for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at Fly on the Call Pod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at flyonthecallpod@gmail.com. Do what you love.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolfpack, Keb Mo, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.